Content warnings for Chapter 25 include an unanesthetized operation on a baby where it's clearly in discomfort, and also somebody is goaded into committing suicide by jumping somebody with a gun. It's not super graphic, but it's not great, so, you know, take care. Chapter 25. Tony helped Anna dismount from the half-track with her valuable burden in her arms. She jounced Sonny happily and cooed down at the pink face. The doctor didn't jounce his own burden. He lifted it down even more carefully than he had helped Anna. The Marcaine box was tightly wrapped in his shirt and hers. They were counting on several layers of cloth to trap escaping dust and protect them from Marcaine jags, but the doctor still wasn't taking any chances on stirring up the contents of the half-full box. They cut across the bare land and back rows of houses, heading toward the curved street near the Candros. "Tony?" Anna asked anxiously again. "How are we possibly going to explain it?" "I told you I don't know." He was only a little irritable. "They had the baby. They had the Marcaine. We'll have to talk to Mimi and Joe and Nick and probably the others, too. We'll see how it goes." "No, I don't mean that," she stopped him. "I mean to Polly and Jim. Jim isn't going to like it unless he hears the whole story, and I don't know if we ought to." "Like it or not," Tony said briskly, "Candrel'll do what we tell him to. We'll have to tell him it's Marcaine. I don't dare risk mislabeling the stuff. You'll have to blow some ampules for it, I guess, and I'll figure out some way of wetting it down and getting it into them. But you're right," he added, "if you mean we shouldn't say any more than we have to just now." They stepped onto the packed dirt of the street and cut across to the Candros. Joe Gracie was sitting alone in the living room. "Praise God," he said quietly, and called, "Polly! Jim!" The couple appeared red-eyed at the nursery door, saw their baby, and flew to him. "You gave him to us again, Doc," said Jim. "Thanks." Polly was more practical. "Has he eaten? Is he well? He looks all right, but..." "You can feed him in a minute. Now listen carefully. This young man of yours, you know, is special in some ways. He can take the Mars air and like it. It turns out that there's something else he needs. Something that's good for him and bad for other people, just like Mars air. It's Marcaine." Polly's face went white. Jim began a guffaw of unbelief that turned into a frown. He asked carefully, "How can that be, Doc? What is this all about? And who took him? We have a right to know." Anna came to Tony's rescue. "You're not going to know right now," she said tartly. "If you think that's hard on you, it's just too bad. You've got your baby back. Now leave the doctor alone until he's ready to tell you more." Jim opened his mouth and shut it again. Polly only asked, "Doctor, are you sure?" "I'm sure. And it won't have anything like the effect on Sonny that it had on you. But it's real Marcaine, all right, and he's got to have it or die." "Like oxen?" asked Candro. "It's only fair in a way." Tony ignored him. "I guess you're going to have to wean the baby after all, Polly," he said. "You can't keep taking Marcaine for Sonny's sake. But for now, I guess you might as well nurse him. Your milk still has Marcaine in it." Candro was still adjusting himself to the idea. "Sonny doesn't need oxen, so he's got to take something else?" "Yes," Tony said. "Like oxen." He broke off, and Anna spun toward him, her eyes wide. The doctor forced his face into calm lines. "I want to have a talk with Joe now. And Nick Cantrella. Anna, will you see if you can get Nick on the intercom? And ask him to come over right away. I've got an idea." In the living room, he told Gracie, "You won't have to keep an eye on them anymore, Joe, but watch me. I feel like Alexander, Napoleon, Eisenhower, and the Great Cham all rolled into one." "You're certainly grinning like a lunatic," the agronomist agreed critically. "What's on your mind?" "Wait a minute. Did you get him?" Tony asked as Anna came into the room. "He's coming," she nodded. "Tony, what is it?" "I'll tell you both soon," he promised. "Let's wait for Nick, so I won't have to repeat it." He paced restlessly around the room, thinking it through again. It ought to work. It ought to. When Contrella arrived, he turned on the two men. "Listen, both of you." He tried not to sound too eager. "If I handed you a piece of living tissue with a percentage of oxygen enzyme, and I don't mean traces, I mean a percentage, where would we stand in respect to..." He halted up the cautious, complicated phraseology. "Hell, what I mean is, could we manufacture oxen?" "The living virus?" Gracie asked. "Not crystallized oxen, processed for absorption?" "The living virus." We'd be a damn sight better than halfway along the processing that the Kelsley people do in Louisville. They grow the first culture from the Rosen batch, and they cull out all the competing enzymes, and then they grow what's left and cull for hundreds of stages to get a percentage of the living virus to grow in a pure culture they can crop and start crystallizing. How about it, Nick? Tony demanded. Could the lab swing a job of crystallizing a crop from that and processing it for absorption? Sure, said Nick. That's the easy part. I've been reading up on it since we talked about it before. Look here, Gracie exploded. Where do you think you're going to get your living virus from? You have to keep getting it, you know. It always mutates under normal radiation sooner or later, and you have to start over again. That's my end of the deal. I have a hunch I can get it. Thanks, both of you. He went into the nursery and told Polly calmly, I'm taking your youngster away again. Just for a few minutes, though. I want to check his lungs in the hospital. Anna? She was already taking the baby from Polly's arms. Tony picked up the wrapped Marcaine box and started out. Hey, Doc, what goes on? Gracie demanded. He brushed past Nick and the puzzled agronomist. Till you later, he called back. On the street, Anna turned a worried face up to his. Tony, what are you doing? You can't operate on a 5-day-old baby. Can you? She finished less certainly. You seem so happy and sure of yourself. I am, he said shortly, and then relented enough to add, the operation, if you want to call it that, won't hurt him. But he wouldn't say any more. Mimi and Brenner were in Tony's living room. The woman said hopelessly, Hello, Tony. Mr. Brenner's made an offer. Oh, it's Sunny. Hello, Mimi, said Tony. The youngster, eh? Brenner said genially. I've heard about him. With a brusque excuse me to the drug manufacturer, Tony said to Anna in an undertone, Rig the op table, sterilites on, get on the portable biopsy containment temperature bath, and set the thermostat to Sunny's blood temperature, and call me. She nodded and went into the hospital with the baby. Tony dropped his bundle into his trunk and began to scrub up. What's been going on, Mimi? He asked. Mr. Brenner's offered us $5,500,000 for Sun Lake's assets. I said the council would put in its formal shape and call a vote. The descent from his peak of inspiration was sickening. Nothing had changed then, Tony thought. Ready, Anna said at his side. He followed her silently into the hospital, slipped into his gloves, and said, Sterilize the Breyer's curette, third extension, and lubricate. Sterilize a small oral speculum. He spoke quietly. Graham was asleep in the bed across the room. Anna didn't move. Anesthesia? She asked. None. We don't know their body chemistry well enough. No, Tony, please, no. He felt only a chill of determination that he was going to salvage some of the wreckage of Sun Lake. Determination and more confidence than he knew he should feel. Anna turned, selected the instruments, and slipped them into the sterilizer. The doctor stepped on the pedal that turned on his op lights. Anna put the speculum into his hand, and he clamped open Sonny's mouth. The prompt wail of protest turned into a strangled cry as the sinuous shaft of the Breyer's curette slid down the trachea into the left bronchus. One steady hand guided the instrument, while the other manipulated the controls from a bulb at its base. Hold him, Tony growled as Anna's hands weakened and the woman swayed. Bronchus, bronchia, bronchi, probing and withdrawing at resistances, and there it was. A pressure on the central control that uncovered the razor-sharp little spoon at the tip of the flexible shaft and covered it again, and then all flexure controls off and out. It had taken less than 5 seconds, and one more to deposit the shred of lung tissue in the biopsy constant temperature nutrient bath. Hank was at the door. Anna, leaning feebly against the table, straightened to tell him, Go and lie down, Hank. It's all right. Keep him away from me, warned Graham from the bed. He was going to jump me before. Just wanted to see the baby, Hank said apologetically. Tony turned to the intercom, buzzing the Candros. Come on over, he told them. You can have your baby back for keeps now. Is Gracie still there, Joe? I think I've got that tissue specimen for you. How fast can you get a test? For God's sake, Tony, where'd you get it? Gracie was demanding on the other end. From a brownie. He couldn't resist it. That's what I said. Lung tissue from a brownie. He hung up. A brownie? It is true. There are brownies, aren't there? Tony turned to find the Candras standing by the examination table. Polly already had her baby in her arms. Jim patted her shoulder. He doesn't really mean it, Polly. Do you, Doc? Graham was grinning openly. Tony turned from one to the other, not answering. There was a commotion in the living room, and Brenner burst in, carrying a familiar box. "He just dived for it, Tony," Mimi said. "He said it was..." "Careful," said the doctor. "You'll spray Marcane all over the place. Put it down, man." Brenner did, and unwrapped it with practiced precision. "My stuff, doctor," he said. "Think I don't know my own crates? Mrs. Jonathan, my price for your assets has just dropped to 2.5 million, and I am now in a position to prosecute. I hope none of you will make difficulties." Jim Candro said, "I don't know what this is all about, but we need that stuff for Sonny." "You don't believe that, do you?" the drug maker asked scornfully. "I don't know what to believe," said Candro, "but he's different. And it makes sense. He doesn't have to take oxen, so he has to take something else. You better leave it for us, Mr. Brenner." The drug maker looked at Jim wisely. "It's okay, Mac," he decided. "If you've got the habit and you can't kick it, why don't you come to work for me? I can use you, and you don't have to take so much. The micron dust in the air takes your edge off." "That's not it," said Candro. "Why don't you listen to me? We need that stuff for Sonny. The doctor says so, and he ought to know. It's medicine, like vitamins. You wouldn't keep vitamins from a little baby, would you?" Graham snickered. Candro turned and lectured angrily. "You stay out of this. There hasn't been anything but trouble since you got here. Now you could at least keep from braying while a man's trying to reason with somebody. You may be smart and a big writer, but you don't have any manners at all if you can't keep quiet at a time like this." He turned to Brenner. "You know we don't have any money here, or I'd offer you what we had. I guess the box is yours, and nobody has a claim to it except you, but Polly and me can get permission from the council to go and work out whatever the box would cost. Couldn't we, Tony? Mimi? The rest would let us, wouldn't they?" "I'm sorry, Mac," the drug maker said. "I wish I could make you understand, but if I can't, it doesn't matter. This box is going with me. It's evidence in a crime." "Mr. Brenner," Jim Candro said thickly, "I can't let you out of here with that box. We need it for Sonny. I told you, and I told you. Now give it here." He put out one huge hand. "How about it, Mrs. Jonathan?" Brenner seemed to be ignoring the big man's menacing advance. "2.5 million? It's a very reasonable price, all things considered. Your new father here would be glad to take it." "I'll take it all right," growled Jim. "Hand it over right now." He was a scant 4 feet from the drug maker. Brenner's eyes were still fixed mockingly on Mimi Jonathan. Candra took one more step forward, and Anna cried faintly, "No!" Brenner stepped back, and there was a large pistol in his hand. "This," he told them, "is fully automatic. It keeps firing as long as I hold the trigger down. Now for the last time, listen, all of you. I'm going, and I'm taking my box with me. If you try to stop me, I have a perfect right to use this gun. You know better than I do what fingerprints the authorities will find on the box. You're caught red-handed, and I won't have any trouble proving it to my man, Bell. If you people decide to be reasonable instead, you better let me know. Soon." Mimi Jonathan said clearly, "So you're going to throw us off Mars, Mr. Brenner?" "If necessary," he said, not following. "I mean, you're going to kick us out, and we'll never see Mars again, and all the sacrifices we made here will be a joke." He didn't get what she was driving at. "Yes," he said irritably, "you're quite right." He was cut off by Hank, broken at last under the goading. The youngster sprang raving at Brenner, bowling him over as a pistol roared in a gush of bullets that ripped Hank's body. And then there was silence into which Sonny Candro shrieked his fear and dismay. Mimi leaned against the wall and shut her eyes. She wanted to vomit. She heard Tony's awed whisper. "Smashed his trachea, broke his neck, belly shot clean out." She shuddered, and hoped and feared that she'd carry this guilt alone to the grave.